Welcome to Persuasive Presentations. As you probably realize by now that giving a great presentation and persuading someone are often two different things. When you give a great presentation and someone says, oh, great presentation, but they didn't do what you asked them to do, you've missed most of the formula. If you're going to present to someone, you need to persuade them. And when you bring these two things together, persuasion and presentation, often things tend to change just a little bit. So I want to teach you how to educate, inspire, and entertain with passion, compassion, and purpose. To learn to capture audiences, to command attention, and convince everyone. How do you radiate that charisma, get that instant credibility, and have that unshakable confidence? So let's talk about the art and science of persuasive communication. Remember and understand that times have changed in the world of presentations. In the past, people would just listen. Now you have to maintain their attention. We have to deal with the MTV generation. Attention spans at an all-time low. In the past, people would just listen. Now they want to be entertained. You have to grab and hold their attention. And the goal every time you do a presentation is to get them to do something. This is a critical, overlooked life skill. There's over 30 million business presentations every day. Speaking is a form of power. You have a responsibility, whether you're presenting over the phone, one-on-one, over a group, or a large audience, to understand how to present with power, to understand the science of persuasive communication. 90% of all managers said that the ability to speak was very, very important, versus only 62% the ability to write. That is a big shift in the business world. And the ability to capture an audience, to present with power, is one of the highest paid skills out there. To be able to present and persuade at the same time is even more priceless. So to revisit that speaking is power, why do I say that? What is your desired response when you speak to somebody? And when I say audience, that could be one person, that could be 1,000 people. And we really have to take a look at ethics and the speaker's responsibility. It is great power to be able to persuade people to your way of thinking. And we need to make sure that your way of thinking is on the right path. I also believe that when you believe in your product or service, you have a moral and ethical responsibility to persuade someone. Because if you don't persuade them, somebody else will that has probably an inferior product. Understand this. This is what I really want you to take away, is that your audience is paying either with their time or their money to hear you. So whether you're speaking to one person or 1,000 people, you have a moral and ethical responsibility to give it your all, to be prepared, not to wing it, not to bore them, and to understand their mindset. One of the most important things as we train presenters and public speakers and teach people how to communicate is to understand mental programming. As we monitor the top people in the field that can persuade, that can present, a lot of it comes back to mindset. You've heard me say this before, that the universe will not reward you physically until you believe it mentally. Let me repeat that. The universe will not reward you physically until you believe it mentally. Until you can see yourself doing a great job mentally, it's not going to happen physically. You're sabotaging yourself. Mindset is everything. And I used to go to seminars and listen to teleconferences and monitor speakers, and I would hear them talk about vision, mindset, and goal setting, the mental aspect of the game. And I used to say, yeah, whatever, give me the tools. And then one day I realized, those are the tools. Society, school, parents, friends, they have programmed you to fail. They have taught you to play, not to lose. I'm talking about let's play to win. Society has taught you a concept called learned helplessness. This phrase is coined by Dr. Martin Seligman, who also on the flip side wrote the book Learned Optimism. We found that in the animal kingdom and human behavior is once somebody tries something a few times and it doesn't work, they give up. And we back up and say, no, it didn't work for you. If you're in real estate or network marketing, being an entrepreneur, or whatever business you are in, you could look at that business and look at countless successful people. It worked for them. But we come up with these excuses why it doesn't work. Well, I tried that before and it didn't work. No, it didn't work for you. And we have to get past that learned helplessness. Well, I'm not a people person. I'm not good with math. I don't understand how that works. I've never been a good speaker that's learned helplessness. It's just like that dog that's howling and moaning, and the neighbor next door hears and, wow, what's that noise? And he walks over to his neighbor and says, what's wrong with your dog? The neighbor was sitting there in a chair, and the dog was lying on the porch. He says, ah, nothing. He's just lying on a nail. He says, lying on a nail, why doesn't he get up? Why doesn't he move? He says, well, because it's probably not hurting him bad enough. And that's what many people do when they look at skills like over the phone or presentation skills. They say, well, I tried it and it didn't work. Or they had a bad experience and they never try it again. We have to get past that. We have to learn to be successful in our presentation skills. You can have all the knowledge in the world, the core competence about your industry, about your business, but if you can't carry that competence across in a presentation, over the phone, or one-on-one, all that knowledge doesn't matter. We've been taught our whole life not to judge, but the minute you speak face-to-face, over the phone, it doesn't matter, you are being judged. And if you have poor presentation skills, you will get judged in the wrong way, maybe in an unfair way. It doesn't matter. It's reality. And you will not get the business. I can't emphasize this point enough. This skill is priceless. It is not taught in school. It's something that you need to learn and master. You look at successful people. You look at CEOs. You look at millionaires. They have mastered the ability to communicate. They have learned to speak and present with power. And as I teach you these skills, you have to understand, you need to adapt these to your own personality style. What is working for you? Make it yours. When you see a great presenter, take what you like. Don't mimic them. Don't do exactly what they're doing. Make it yours. So mental programming is critical. So the first part of mental programming is mindset. The second is fear. Public speaking is one of the number one fears out there. If you want to know the term is laliophobia. The fear of public speaking. Why are people so afraid to speak? Well, part of it is the fear of criticism. What are people going to say? What if they don't like me? What if you reveal your stupidities? There's a long list of things, but you have to learn to manage and control this fear. And understand, this is a learned fear. You picked up this fear. You weren't born with it. We all know a newborn baby was only born with two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. Then all of a sudden, one of the number one fears is the fear of public speaking, which is higher than the fear of death. And that's why Jerry Seinfeld makes fun of it, that people would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy. So ask yourself, what drives your fear? As I train presenters and communicators, for most of them that have great fear, it comes back to a childhood experience. I was talking to this young lady who had a great fear of public speaking. I would just mention it, and you could feel her getting tense and nervous. And so we sat down and we talked about it and came back to an experience when she was in third grade and she was going to give a speech. She wasn't scared. She was walking across the stage. She was ready. She was prepared. And she tripped and fell. And of course, the whole audience laughed. It was funny. And she became mortified. They were laughing at her. She stumbled across her speech. She didn't do a good job. And what happens is every time she thinks of public speaking or presenting in front of a group, this fear returns. She remembers this moment, and all those feelings come back to her. I said, well, let's try something different. Let's visualize. Let's imagine you come into the audience as a grown person, as an adult, and you're watching yourself as a third grader go across that stage, and you trip, and you fall. What happens? And she kind of smiles. She said, I would laugh. I said, exactly. So she changed her mindset. She reprogrammed her mind, and it made a huge difference to learn to manage those fears. You see, many people fail because they make excuses before the failure even occurs. Just in case, they have to save face. This is known as a loser's limp. You ask someone to play a game, and he says, sure, oh, but my knee is really hurting. I'll see how well I do. I'm tired. I don't feel well. Never make excuses before you try. You are feeding your subconscious mind with an excuse why it's okay to fail. And you've programmed yourself all these reasons why you're going to fail, all these reasons why it's not going to work, all the reasons why you're going to forget your note, all the reasons why the audience is going to listen, and that's what's going to happen. That is what you're manifesting. I have a daughter that loves to be in front of groups of people, loves to speak. She's young. And it drives me nuts that every time she goes up in front of a stage or an audience, the adults say, are you nervous? Are you scared? You should be nervous. I would be nervous. Thinking, what are you doing? You're programming her to fail. She's not scared. Why are you telling her she should be scared? And the same thing's true with your mind. You have to ask yourself, what is the worst thing that could happen? You have to think about everything that could go right during your presentation. Remember, this is a learned fear. You need to unlearn it. You need to program your mind to win. You need to think about what's triggering this fear, what's triggering this nervousness, and then you can move forward. For example, if you were afraid of a dentist, you thought about it, put it off, you were scared, what if it hurts, what if it hurts, what if this happens? Usually you go because the pain is so bad, and then you visit the dentist, and 99 times out of 100, it's, oh, well, that wasn't so bad, but you wasted 2 years of your life worrying about it. The same thing's true about presentations. You have to understand that your audience, again, one-on-one or a group of people, is rooting for you. They don't want you to blow it. They don't want you to waste your time. That's important to understand. Fear is an interesting thing. A lot of times it doesn't make sense. Spiders, snakes, the fear of flying. We really have to understand to control and manage this fear. Remember, fear is anxiety or tension caused by danger or apprehension. It could be real, it could be imagined. And this type of fear is extinguished by getting out and doing it and realizing it wasn't that bad. Now, when you look at the word fear, some people say false expectations appearing real. I like the term forget everything and run. But in reality, I think it's frozen energy. Actions required. Get out there and do it. Put yourself in situations where you're a little nervous, maybe a little scared. That's how you grow. That's how you progress. And here's a reality check. Every speaker I know is a little nervous. That is normal. If you weren't nervous, that would make me nervous. Because you're probably just going through the motions. You're not going to do the best job possible. Because when you're nervous, what happens is your heart rate increases, sometimes your core temperature decreases, and your job is to learn how to manage these butterflies in your stomach. Great presenters say they have butterflies, but what they do is they get those butterflies to fly in formation. And what are the top fears out there? Well, I'll bore them. I will vomit. I rarely see that. I will freeze. I'll forget what I have to say. They won't like me. And I want to point out something right now. As I monitor persuaders and presenters, and I monitor their nervousness, this is one thing I found out that's very important for you to understand. The audience has no clue how nervous you are unless you tell them. It is a rare instance where the audience can tell how nervous you really feel. Because unless you lose something like bladder control, they have no idea how nervous you are. And to overcome your fear, you have to understand, first of all, don't expect perfection. There's no such thing as a perfect speech. Think about what is triggering this nervousness. And realize we all have stories to tell. I remember giving one of my first presentations. They wired me up with a wireless microphone. I was kind of pacing, a little bit nervous. It was a large audience. I still had 10 minutes before I had to speak, and I made an emergency trip to the restroom, and I forgot to turn off my microphone, and the whole experience was broadcast to this group of people. And when I came back in the room, of course, all the eyes were on me. These things will happen. They're good for the stories that you can tell. Or I remember talking to a speaker and this gentleman walking in the room, and the other person who was wired say, "Wow, did you see the lump on that guy's head?" And of course, that was broadcast. I've had a polka band next door so loud I could barely hear myself think. I've had a person in the back of the room that smelled so bad it made the whole audience's eyes water. I was teaching a workshop in San Francisco, and all of a sudden this beautiful young lady in a bikini comes walking in and comes in, "Hey, can I learn? Can I sit down for a while?" Of course, the whole audience is distracted. What do you do with that? Or everyone looking out the window and watching a wedding. I was in Florida and a large ship beached itself while we were doing a workshop. All these things are going to happen. You can't worry about them. You have to control your fear and your nervousness. And it's such an incredible feeling to really be able to educate, inspire, and entertain with passion, compassion, and purpose and see the change in your audience's life. I had some incredible experiences and I'd have some experiences that have been rock bottom. I was called up once to speak at a youth sports camp. It was during the summer. They said, "Please do it for the community." So I came up. Here's a group of youth, 12 to 14. They had just eaten dinner. They were in a large basketball arena. They were all spread out. And they gave me a little microphone that was hooked to a karaoke machine. Wow. things happen. We're speaking at a chiropractor convention when I first got started, and I wasn't the main speaker, and I had to speak while they were eating. I can't emphasize enough how important this skill is. Again, nervousness is normal. You're learning to control it, to harness it, to help you give a great presentation. Another aspect of fear is to understand the more you prepare, the less fear you're going to have. The audience starts in neutral. They want you to succeed. And realize, as we talked about, the mental programming of speaking in public. It's just like the mental preparation of athletes. They go through the whole race, the whole game in their mind before it happens. And as a professional presenter, you need to do the same thing. Now, some presenters use daily affirmations. Some meditate. Some use alcohol. Some visit the site. Some make sure their first 5 minutes is so perfect that it gives them confidence. Some like to pace back and forth. Some do breathing exercises. Hey, it's whatever works for you, but you need to have some type of ritual to get in control of yourself before you give a presentation. Some people like to imagine their audience in their underwear. Hey, if it works for you, didn't work for me. Some people like to pretend the audience owes them money and it changes their demeanor a little bit to where they give a better presentation. And you have to get past that fear of criticism. Napoleon Hill said, "The fear of criticism robs man of his initiative, destroys his power of imagination, limits his individuality, and takes away his self-reliance." Did you hear that? Criticism destroys imagination, individuality, and self-reliance. We have to get past that. You have to be in control of the situation. And I do want to point out that we see with rookie persuaders, and even average persuaders and presenters, is they tend to plant seeds and give that seed water. Let me explain. When they get up and they said, "Well, you know, I'm really nervous. I'm afraid to be up here." Guess what your audience is going to look for? That fear. Or, "Well, I know I'm boring." You've planted the seed. They're going to expect you to be boring. "Well, I have nothing good to say." Or even saying, "Well, I made a mistake. Let me back up. I forgot something." They don't know that. You don't say, "Well, I didn't sleep last night. I prepared at the last second. I'm a little gassy. I'm going to vomit." You don't want to do any of that. Don't plant those seeds because they'll start looking for those. Overcome the fears. Control your nervousness. Get past the fear of criticism. It'll make a huge aspect in your ability to be successful as a presenter. As you notice, this is the first thing I'm talking about is the mental programming, because until you have this down, all the other aspects and skill of presentations is not going to matter. The next aspect of mental programming is visualization. Understanding your conscious versus your subconscious mind. Your thoughts control your emotions, and your emotions control your actions. You need to be able to program your subconscious mind to be successful. As I monitor great presenters, they have programmed their subconscious mind for success. They know that when their subconscious mind accepts what they're telling you, accepts what you program, everything else falls into place. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but until you can see yourself giving a great presentation and being confident and building the trust of your audience and being persuasive, nothing else will matter. Remember, you are being judged. Right or wrong, we're dealing with reality. Every gesture attracts or distracts from your message. Every word you use attracts or distracts from your message. Even your vocal fillers distracts from your credibility. So let's talk about these. Your vocal fillers. What is a vocal filler? You know, like. We all use a few of these, but the more you use, it detracts from your credibility. Now, one here and there is not a big deal. You've talked to people before that had so many vocal fillers that every time they used one, you noticed it. It was like a knife stabbing you. It was so apparent. Now, most presenters say they don't have a challenge with this. You do. Record yourself. Catch yourself. This is important to understand. You see, the way the brain works is we tend to think in sections. And between those sections, between those thoughts, we throw in a vocal filler. Like, you know. And we don't even recognize it on a conscious level. So you need to be ready to catch yourself. First of all, record yourself. Know that you have them. Second of all, program your mind to catch yourself. Now, what's going to happen at first is you're going to catch yourself after you've said it. You're going to catch yourself while you say it. Then after a while, you'll catch yourself before you say it. And that's when you can fix it. Vocal fillers. The next thing that's really distracting as we monitor people you're giving presentations to is your nonverbal habits. What are you doing that's detracting from your message? So let's take a look at some nonverbals. First of all, your hands should never be in your pocket. You should never touch your face. You should never play with your hair, your earrings. We see a lot of people play with their fingers and play with their hands. It's like they're washing their hands in front of their stomach. That's not a very confident position. Understand that your neutral area needs to be down at your waist. Bring your hands up for purposeful movements, but then bring them back again. Now, I understand it's going to feel awkward at first, and that's how it works, but this is what great persuaders do. Great presenters. Monitor them. Watch them. Because when you're pulling your fingers, washing your hands, it distracts from your message. Use your gestures and bring them back. Understand that up to 95% of persuasion involves a subconscious trigger. So if you're going to move your hands, put your arms out parallel with your shoulders, draw a little box out to your hip. That is a safe place to move your hands. If you ever come up above your shoulders, if your hand ever rises above your shoulders, that's a bad subconscious trigger. It makes people nervous. Why? Well, when they grew up and a hand came up above their shoulders, it means they were going to get it. Now they're not thinking, oh, my father used to do that before he'd strike me. That makes me nervous. No, it's a subconscious trigger. They just feel nervous. They feel something is wrong. So don't play with your hair or your earrings or your shirt or pull your fingers or wash your hands. Have a confident stance. No fig leaves. That's with your hands over each other covering a certain part of your body. That's not a very confident stance, but a lot of people do it. Or the reverse fig leaf behind themselves. We have a lot of detracting mannerisms like monotone, reading the presentation. Now, that's a strange thing. They're losing their audience, and most presenters start speaking faster and reading their presentation faster. That is not what we want. You need eye contact with your audience. Again, these are things that your audience says they want or don't want. Get away from the podium. That sucks the energy out of you. Get in front of people. Should you pace? Well, be careful. That makes a lot of people nervous and tense if you do it the wrong way. If you need to move, that's fine, but you move to a spot, you own it, you plant. So if you're going to move 2, 3, 4 feet in a different direction, go that way, plant for a while, and then move on. If you just go back and forth without planting, it makes people very nervous and very tense. People tend to sway like a tree or put more weight on one foot than the other. And I know many of you are like, yeah, I don't do that. Oh, wow. Let's videotape. Let's record yourself, and you're going to see many of these things. It's one of the most painful things I do with presentation students is we record them. Because I can say it all day long, watch this, but when they see it, that's when the magic happens. So we have to look for anything that distracts from your message. Your vocal fillers, your nonverbal behavior, your monotone, all these things come into play. Record yourself, and you'll see a big difference in what you're able to fine-tune and fix as a professional presenter. Another sign of a professional presenter is that they never go over time. If you're told 10 minutes, if you're told 15 minutes, if you're told 5 minutes, that's how long you take. If the audience was told the meeting would be over at 2 o'clock, and you were told you get 20 minutes to speak, and there's only 10 minutes left, guess what? 10 minutes. Because let's back up here. I know you've been in an audience before, and you expect to get out at 2 o'clock, and the speaker keeps going past 2 o'clock. Longer than your expectations. Now, here's the ironic thing. The audience member starts having negative feelings and bad thoughts about the presenter. Now, I know that's not what you want. Well, you were told 20 minutes, so you're going to take 20 minutes. That's not going to help you persuade the audience. You need to be professional enough to know that if you get 20 minutes, you take 20 minutes. You never go over, number one. And number two, even if they told you 20 minutes and there's 10 minutes left, that's how long you take. You should be able to get your message across in 10 minutes, in 5 minutes, in 2 minutes, or even 30 minutes. You have to be able to adjust your presentation. Never go over. And I tell my students this. When you go over on a speech, it tells me two things. Either you didn't prepare or you don't like me. Okay? That is reality. Never go over. Another aspect we notice in great presenters and persuaders is their passion. You see, passion more than anything else recruits the hearts and minds of the people that you're talking to. They can sense it. They can feel it. They are motivated. They are drawn to you. Because when you have passion, you have a sense of mission. It drives and motivates you, and it stimulates your imagination. I've always thought it was interesting what Martin Luther King said. He said, if a man hasn't discovered something that he will die for, he isn't fit to live. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be willing to die for your product or your service or your idea. What I'm saying is, when you really believe in something, when you have passion, your audience can sense that. When your audience can sense your passion and heartfelt conviction for your cause or product, they emotionally jump on board. We love people who are excited, animated, and full of passion. When you have that passion, you are excited, you have zeal, and you want to share it with the world. You will be swayed by the opinions of others. You're excited to convert as many people to your cause as possible. When you have passion, you have a sense of mission that drives you and stimulates your imagination, and that motivates you to higher levels of achievement. Passion alone can be effective in swaying opinions and getting people to support your product, service, or cause. So let me ask you, do you have passion? Are you trying to tap into things in your life that you're passionate about? Realize that passion comes from a combination of three things. The belief in what you're doing. If you don't believe in your product or service, you need to do two things. You need to start studying, doing research, because the more you learn, the more passionate you become, or you need to find another product or service. Being enthusiastic and transferring emotion. So belief, enthusiasm, and emotion is all part of your passion. I've had presentation students get up before and give me a quick speech on what they're passionate about. And I have seen everything. Rock climbing, charities, families. I had this one student do a whole passionate speech about frozen yogurt. Yeah, frozen yogurt. He was passionate about it. But here's the reality. He talked about frozen yogurts, where to go, and all the toppings, and his passion was so strong for frozen yogurt that when he was done, guess what we all wanted? Frozen yogurt. A young lady got up and started talking about scrapbooking. I don't know about you, I don't get scrapbooking and why people spend so much time. Just have never really gotten it. But she was so passionate about scrapbooking and showed us the pages and what to do and where to go and resources. It was amazing. Now, I'll still never scrapbook, but I understand why people do. That is passion. And a subset of passion is enthusiasm, which is contagious. You've heard it before that your enthusiasm or lack of enthusiasm is very contagious. Emerson said, "Nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is the great moving force of spirit and energy that permeates all we do. It is the force that keeps motivation going until the goal is reached." And another favorite quote coming from Norman Vincent Peale said, "When one gets enthusiastic, the entire personality lights up. The mind becomes sharper, more intuitive. The entire life force and creative ability are enhanced. Such a person is motivated and will certainly make an impact." So enthusiasm is described as a strong excitement or feeling on behalf of a cause or a subject. In Greek, the word means to be inspired by God. When you have enthusiasm, or lack of it, we know that's contagious. Enthusiasm infects people so much that they feel your energy and excitement. Develop enthusiasm by gaining information and knowledge about your product or your subject. Believe in yourself and your message. Tap into your emotions and learn how to express them. So when you talk about passion, when you talk about enthusiasm, I have to ask you this question. And I want you to be honest with yourself. When you speak to an audience over the phone, one-on-one, in a group situation, doesn't matter. I want you to ask yourself the question, are you singing the song or are you singing the words? Repeat that. Are you singing the song or are you singing the words? Meaning, are you just going through the motions and singing the words? Or are you really feeling the song? You're singing the song where people can sense it and feel it. It's amazing at the Persuasion Institute. People contact us. We develop scripts. We give it to one person. 80% success rate. Working very, very well. They give it to someone else, and the success percentage drops. We say, wait a minute, what's going on here? Same script, same people, same talents, same skills, but a drop in success. And it came back to passion. Were they going through the motions, or did they really feel it? Another aspect of great presenters is attitude. And you've probably heard the quote that success in life is 85% attitude and 15% aptitude. And we know that to be true. And as we monitor audiences, they all talk about the attitude of the presenter. They can see it. And you have to ask yourself, what are they seeing in you? You see, attitude is a reflection of what's happening inside. If they can sense that you don't want to be there, if they can sense you have a bad attitude, if they can sense you don't care about them, you will not be persuasive. Now, the ironic thing is they're never going to come up to you and say they didn't like you, they didn't trust you, they felt that you didn't care for them. They will just not be persuaded by you. That is reality. Our attitude is a habit. Our attitude is based on expectations. What you expect is your attitude. If you expect to have a bad day, you're going to. If you expect to give a great presentation, it's going to happen. See, most people are chameleons. They absorb the attitudes of other people. They wait for someone to cut them off on the way to work, and that dictates their attitude for the whole day. Great presenters, great persuaders have the ability to adjust their attitude on a moment's notice. You design your attitudes, not society, not your coworkers, not your family, not your friends. You decide what your expectations are going to be through the day. You decide what your attitude is going to be. You decide what's happening on the inside. Our attitude reveals to the world what we expect in return. When we start to understand our attitudes and they start neutral and we can change them, and it all depends on what we think and what we feel. When you understand that, you can control and maintain your attitudes. Another aspect of great presenters is vision. Vision generates energy. Vision pulls people together. When they can see what you're asking them to do, you'll become a successful presenter and persuader. If you ask them to do something and they can't see themselves doing it, when they can't see the vision of the future, first of all, they get stuck on worry. Second of all, you can't persuade them. That's why you get so many knee-jerk reactions in persuasion. It's too expensive, not now, some more information, is because your audience cannot see themselves doing what you're asking them to do. They rarely will tell you that. They don't want to look stupid. They will just not do what you're asking them to do. Understand your vision must include excitement. Understand with vision, you create excitement. It increases your ability to influence. It creates converts. And understand with vision, you must have a coherent plan they can follow. Here's the reality check. When your audience is worrying about what if this happens, and worry, by the way, is negative goal setting, when they're stuck on worry, what if about this, when this happens, it's because you didn't build a vision for them. When you can broadcast a vision that they can see, taste, touch, and feel, the worry falls by the wayside. Work on your vision. Broadcast a powerful vision. We also notice great presenters is that they have a rehearsal. I've always been impressed with Zig Ziglar. If you've seen Zig Ziglar speak, it is an amazing thing. He is a great speaker. He is one of the ones that started the personal development industry. He has given the same speech thousands of times, but he still prepares. He still reviews before each speech. That is a sign of professional. They don't wing it. Doesn't matter how many times you give the presentation, they prepare. So if you're going to learn how to do a rehearsal, whether it's your first time or your 50th time, here are some things that work for great presenters. They practice on other people, people that will give them constructive feedback. You don't want to practice in front of the most important people, the people that will give you their business. You want to practice on people, coworkers, family, it doesn't matter, that can give you great feedback. And so when you give the presentation that counts, it's not the first time. For many presenters, and this works great for me, is I actually go to the location where I'm going to speak. If it's in a large auditorium with 1,000 people, I go the night before and I go on the stage. And I look out at the empty seats and I visualize what's going to happen. And that really relaxes nerves. Can you record yourself? Can you practice in front of a mirror? Make sure you test your stories and jokes with other people before you actually deliver them. Because I know you've heard a funny joke or funny story before, and then you laughed, you're excited to tell someone else, you told someone else, and they just looked at you in a strange way. It's all in the delivery. It's not just the words. They rehearse their jokes. They rehearse their pauses. They rehearse their stories. That's a mark of a great presenter. Practice. You want to know the reality here? I'm not here to sugarcoat it. Here's what they say. And the first time you give a presentation, it's 1 hour of preparation for every minute. You might say you don't have the time. Well, that might be true. But if you really need to become a great presenter, this is what it takes. And on a side note, make sure you get plenty of sleep. It really helps you give a great presentation. So if you were going to take a speech communication 101 class at the local university, they'll probably teach you the speech communication process. And I just want to review this with you so you understand the whole process of communication. The first is the speaker. When you look at the whole process, you need a speaker, that is you. Now, as a speaker, people are looking at your personal credibility. Do they sense your knowledge of the subject, which could be either real or perceived? How you speak and your appearance. They are judging all those different things. Your voice, your look, your clothes, your accent, your competence. Who has recommended you? That's the speaker. The second one is the message. Now, what you intended to communicate and that which is actually communicated usually are two different things. That would be your verbals, the word you use, your inflection, and your nonverbals. Your bad habits. What are you doing that's detracting from your message? The third is the channel. That's pretty easy. That's the means by which the message was communicated. Over the phone, face-to-face, one-on-one, large group. That's the channel. The fourth one is listener. That's the person, that's your audience that receives the communicated message. What do they think about you? What's going through their head? Have you given them a what's in it for me? What do they want to hear? And what do they not want to hear? You've heard it before not to talk about religion and politics because half your audience is going to be against you no matter what you say, unless that's what you're persuading on. You have to look at the listener and understand your audience. We're going to teach you throughout these audios exactly how to understand your audience. The fifth one is feedback. You have to learn to read your audience like a book. You can read people. You can sense what they're going through. You can sense when they're bored. You can sense when they're indifferent. You can sense when they want to go. You can sense when they need a break. You need to learn how to do this. You need to learn how to read your audience, the energy level of your audience. You can sense when they don't trust you. And when you develop these skills, you'll be able to adapt and adjust your message. So with feedback, how do you know when the audience is really on board? Are they laughing at your jokes? Are they leaning forward? Are they applauding? Or are their arms crossed? Are they looking away? Are they not taking notes? They're waiting for the next break? You need to learn to read your audience. Number six is interference. Now, that can be something internal happening inside their brain or something external. The rock band next door, their stomach being upset. There's the person that's always looking for a flaw in your presentation or in your PowerPoints. This is what we call the heckler. I want to teach you how to handle the heckler. What do you do when somebody goes against your message or is trying to cause trouble within your audience? If you need to learn to handle that, because that is a mark of a great presenter. And last but not least, number seven is the situation. The time and place the speech is taking place. The morning is different than the afternoon. Presenting at dinner time is a lot different than presenting in the morning. Humor in certain situations is not appropriate. The situation is critical. What are their expectations? Remember, to become a student, not a follower, to learn and cut and paste what works for you. There's 10 crucial steps you need to go through as a presenter. And they're not necessarily in this order, but they're pretty close. The first thing we need to work on, which we've talked about, is overcoming nervousness and uneasiness. Remember, when you're nervous, your body is responding to extra adrenaline. That's a hormone that's released into the bloodstream, and that's always in response to physical or mental stress. Reduce the nervousness. Get the speaking experience. Prepare. Think positively and visualize. And remember, don't expect perfection. The next one is remembering what to say, not relying on notes or PowerPoint. Number three is correct body language. Number four, your inflection, your tone, and your vocabulary. Number five, learning to customize your presentation to your group. Number six, learning how to read your audience. Number seven, learning to handle hecklers or people that are indifferent or not listening. Number eight, learning to persuade during your presentation. Number nine, setting that true emotion, transferring that passion and that enthusiasm. And number 10, we need to talk about your presence. Getting past that fear. Learning that when they're not listening, you need to shift gears, not speed up. Learning to have a presence where they want to listen to you. I want you to get it in your mindset that if they don't buy from you, if you don't persuade them, they lose. They're going to go to someone else that takes advantage of them and gives them an inferior product. We're going to teach you through these audios to help them give you permission to persuade them. Now, you might offend somebody here and there, but you have to understand as a presenter, you can't persuade and inspire your whole audience. And I know this is hard as a presenter. I've had a challenge with this too. You have 200 people. You deliver your best presentation. You get a standing ovation. 20 people come up, say, thank you, you changed my life. And then the one person says, I didn't learn anything. Or I've heard that before. Or you're not a good presenter. Or that was lame. Whatever it is. Now let's back up here. 20 positive to 1 negative. That's a great ratio. But if you don't train yourself, you focus on the 1 negative and you forget about all the lives you've changed. Some people are that way. Some people are going to spit on your dreams. Some people are going to be negative just because that's how they are. Even if they liked it, they're not going to say it. You can't get absorbed in that. You have to know that you want to affect the majority of the audience. And nothing's better than captivating and inspiring a whole audience. It's exhilarating. That knowledge, that skill, that power to captivate and educate and motivate an audience is powerful. So let me review and throw some things at you that will really help you at this initial stage of becoming a great presenter. Remember, you can't eliminate all your fear and all your nervousness. Your goal is to control that anxiety. Every speaker goes through this at various levels. Remember, the saying is, you'll have butterflies, but you want to get those butterflies to fly in formation. When you do get nervous, find that ritual. Find a way to get yourself back in the game. And I know becoming a great presenter is like exercising for the first time in 5 years. We're ripping you out of your comfort zone. But after a while, it becomes natural to you. You even start liking to do it. Because you ever seen an audience throw things? I mean, how many people actually come up and say, man, that was a terrible presentation? Say, wow, you should have stayed home. You see, that never happens. They're not going to say that to you. You'll never give that perfect presentation. And as you prepare at the beginning of your speech, understand if you get a dry mouth, maybe you should use a little candy. Don't sit with your legs crossed because they could go to sleep. Remember, your audience wants you to succeed. Start with a strong and persistent desire. Don't wish it. Make sure it happens. Act confident. Think positively. Be at your best physically and mentally. We talked about visualization, affirmation, calming music, nap, meditation, yoga, pacing, whatever it is works for you. Find a ritual that gets you back in the day and that can control your nervousness so when you get on that stage or call on the phone, you are ready to give a great presentation. And if any moment during your presentation you start to lose control, you need to have what we call a crutch. Something you can do for a few minutes that'll help you regain your composure. Maybe you need to take a break. Or there's a story you can tell you know that works. Maybe it's a video or DVD, an overhead, a model, a presentation, or a visual aid you can use. So when those things get out of control, maybe there's something that you can do that you know that works. Maybe you need to slow down, take a drink of water, ask a question, review your notes. All these things go a long way in helping you out. If you tend to sweat a lot, maybe you should carry a handkerchief. If you tend to get red splotches on your face, wear red or pink colors. If you're a woman, if you tend to get red in the neck, you can wear high blouses or high necklines or wear a tie if you're a man. If your voice gets shaky, you can project your voice to the back of the room. If your hands get shaky, you can hold an object. There's so many different things that you can learn and master. But understand, you need to take good care of your voice. Drinking ice water will limit the projection of your voice. Your voice will also not last as long. You need to drink warm water. You need to stay away from soda, unless you want to burp during your presentation. If you had that spinach dip for lunch, you need to check your teeth. If your throat's hurting so bad, sometimes you need to chew aspirin and it'll numb your whole throat. These things are critical to your success. These are the things that we are going to learn throughout these next audios. What is the difference between an effective speaker and ineffective speaker? We know that the effective speaker can educate, inspire, and entertain with passion, compassion, and purpose. They have presence, they have charisma, and their audience wants to be persuaded by them. The ineffective speaker relies on notes or PowerPoint, tends to pace, hides behind a podium, or stands in one spot. You can tell they really don't want to be there. There's no enthusiasm. They're not glad to be there. They go long. All these things come into play. So I want you to tighten your seatbelt. I want you to start listening to these audios, do the workbook, and take great notes. Because when you become a magnetic presenter, when you become an effective communicator, when you can communicate with power, it'll change your life, change your income, and you will be able to make the world a better place.